I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
We're Building Bridges.
We'll speak with the coordinator of the South African Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement about why they are constantly reminded that Israeli apartheid in Palestine must be fought with the same ferocity, will, and moral fortitude as that of South Africa.
Roshan Dadu, the daughter of the late freedom fighter and chair of the South African Communist Party in the South African Indian Congress, Dr. Youssef Dadu, joins us now. Roshan is the regional advocacy officer at Consortium for Refugees and Migrants in South Africa and coordinator of the South African Boycott, Sanction and Divestment Movement, and on the steering committee of the South African Anti-Apartheid Conference. She joins us now to tell us why South Africans are saying there must be, there will be no business with the U.S. while it sends weapons and military equipment to apartheid Israel. And now, Roshan Dadu.
We are entering this discussion just as we are told about the bombing of another healthcare facility, a hospital. I am most interested in the issue of our South African comrades, how they relate to and understand and are involved in the opposition to the Israeli unfolding genocide.
In South Africa, as you say, we have a long history of a common struggle with the Palestinian people. During our liberation struggles, obviously people met each other all around the world that were involved in our struggle and the Palestinian struggle, the PLO at the time. So we have always had this close relationship, this understanding that the Palestinian struggle was also an anti-colonial struggle, that Zionism was a settler colonial project, very similar to the apartheid settler colonial project. It was a form of apartheid, which became more and more apparent. And I think in 2001 at the World Conference Against Racism in Durban, South Africa, was the first time a civil society UN gathering use the language of apartheid. And also people like the late Archbishop Desmond Tutu had described the situation in Palestine as worse than apartheid. And again, more recently, Reverend Frank Chikane, who was there with the South African Council of Churches a year or so ago, again described it as worse than apartheid. Of course, Palestinians have long been saying so, but I think it took quite a long time for the language of identifying the system of oppression and fragmentation and racialized segregation as fitting the definition of apartheid in the Apartheid Convention, that rapidly gained ground just a couple of years ago with the publication of reports by Human Rights Watch and then Amnesty International, B'Tselem and Yesh Din, the Israeli human rights organizations. The most recent one was the Palestinian human rights organization, Al-Haq, which used the language of apartheid being a tool of settler colonialism. So looking at our experience in South Africa, where we have dismantled the system of apartheid, but we have not dismantled the underlying settler colonial nature of the state. We, you know, obviously are facing many, many challenges that relate to that partial project, so that now we still have issues around land ownership, economic growth, around the spatial apartheid that remains pretty much the same, given the economic, our entry into that post-apartheid world during the kind of triumph of capital, as it was seen, where it became almost impossible to propose that there was an alternative economic model to follow 1990 onwards. It's interesting that still now struggles are informing each other. So when we see what's happening now, right now, the current Israeli government, there's no pretense anymore. The statements it makes, the dehumanization of Palestinians, the defense minister calling Palestinians human animals, you know, they are admitting that it's a genocidal project, that it is ethnic cleansing. And therefore, I think it's quite clear that it is an unfolding genocide. Also, the Western media and our media, in fact, picks up this framing of it being an Israeli war against Hamas. But if you look at what's going on in the West Bank, over 100 people have been killed since the 7th of October, and raids into Jenin refugee camps, raids into villages. It was preceded just a few days before the 7th of October by another pogrom in the village of Hawara, which the Israeli minister had said should be wiped out. They are admitting, yes, we have this intention to commit genocide, to ethnically cleanse what remains of the Palestinian people. I think it's very, you know, that's caused a great upswing of solidarity in South Africa that maybe was there but was not active. I think people are really feeling, well, obviously upset and emotional, but also very angry. And because of this reflection of our struggle and the connection we have with the Palestinian people and their resistance, yeah, we're trying to organize and mobilize and put pressure also on our own government, but as well as at the moment on your government, who is here with this trade summit, this Africa Growth and Opportunities Act summit as well.
Talk more about the trade summit and what that means in the context of this and why this provides an opportunity for protest from our South African comrades on the issue of the unfolding genocide in Israel.
This AGOA is up for renewal. And so today our president was there. The counterpart is the American Trade Minister Tai, and our trade minister, Ibrahim Patel. But today our president was there to officially make a speech and an opening. And he's arguing that this trade deal must be extended for a much longer period of time. There are lots of arguments that have been made, especially by unions, around why this supposedly beneficial trade and tariff regime actually isn't, is detrimental to South African, the South African economy and the other African countries that are involved. But our issue is we don't see how you can have a senior minister from the United States here, how you can have a whole delegation of business people, a whole delegation of officials coming here to South Africa at this moment when the United States could stop the genocide if it chose to. It funds the military, the regular more than $3.8 billion US military aid to Israel. It then was boasting in the media about having sent additional plane loads of munitions just after 7th of October. And now Biden is pushing through that bill to extend massively military aid to Israel. And we're watching what that military aid does. It's literally paying for the genocide. It's enabling it. And even worse than that was watching the American permanent representative in New York voting against the most minimal humanitarian pause. I mean, that's the most minimal you could find. When at the time of the Russia invasion of Ukraine, America was screeching about humanitarian corridors. Why isn't Russia allowing these humanitarian corridors? So the hypocrisy and coming here and trying to do trade deals with us at this moment without raising the issue, without our government raising the issue, is what we're really protesting about. The trade unions, for the first time, apparently, there was a so-called trade union forum. So it's included, I think, some of the African trade unions and the South African trade unions. We were calling on them to boycott because we know that they do support the Palestinian struggle. This was an interesting sort of mixed result. We're hoping still that they will come at our protest, even if they participated. COSATU, the federation that's part of the ruling party ANC Alliance, of course, said no, they were going to participate. The slightly newer independent union federation, they have now come out and said, you know, sort of support of protesting US imperialism, basically. And some of the unions involved in those federations have taken a very leading role now in Palestine solidarity protests. It's not uniform, and we have a lot of work to do. Because if you look at the AGOA Act, I mean, it's an American act, so it wasn't some kind of two-way process of negotiation. They came with their act, passed through your Senate, and if you look at the stipulations of who is eligible, it's saying if you take foreign policy positions that we don't like, we're going to threaten you with removing you from this. They have removed Gabon, Niger, and Central African Republic, of course, this year after the coups, which they feel are anti-Western, anti-Western, pro-Russian coups, I suppose. Last year or so, they removed Ethiopia because of the war in Tigray. And it actually says that countries, you know, one of the criteria for eligibility, it involves not doing or saying anything that is not in the interest of American national security. So obviously it's designed not only to have an economic benefit to America, because in fact things like American chickens flooded our market through this AGOA deal, because obviously the African countries are weaker economies. But it also threatens countries with, if you don't toe our line, like Uganda. I mean, in the case of Uganda, they threw them out because of the homophobic legislation that they've introduced. But it, you know, the point is, why should the US dictate our foreign policy? Why should South Africa be silent about its very real support for Palestine? And actually, in our foreign minister is doing amazing work in the African Union and the UN, playing a very leading role and going quite beyond what the rest of our government is saying. But so we really want to put pressure and say, you know, you have to sing from one hymn sheet. You can't be saying, doing this on the one hand and then hiding because you're scared of America on the other. Let's collectively tell it like it is and show our support for Palestine and the struggle at the moment in the face of this genocide.
Can you explain the support of the South African government for this support of the U.S. government role in the current genocide in Palestine?
Well, I mean, the South African government has made, just a few days ago, our Department of International Relations and Cooperation has made really strong statements of support for Palestine, going way beyond what many other countries have done. And we know that Palestinians, of course, look to South Africa, look to civil society and our government as having being the support being very meaningful coming from South Africa. But there's lots of contradictions. So our president is very much, his statements are very much weaker than our foreign ministers, for instance. And now with this trade story, this AGOA Act, there's been no mention of Palestine from our government. So, you know, it's very inconsistent. We still have an apartheid Israeli embassy here. And one of our demands that's gaining a lot of traction is, why? We want it closed down and we want that apartheid ambassador out, because in our struggle, that was exactly the demands we put on the international community, to isolate the apartheid regime, for people to implement boycotts and take boycott actions against apartheid South African products in shops, consumer boycotts on companies to divest, and ultimately to use that pressure to put pressure on governments to implement sanctions and an arms embargo and an oil embargo in our case. And the Palestinian BDS call is very much driven by that example, because it was effective. It created a popular movement around the world, putting pressure on their own governments in support of the struggles going on within South Africa and our armed struggle. And so, you know, we as affiliate of the Palestinian BDS movement, and therefore the global BDS movement, are really, you know, really disgusted when our government doesn't see the very same things we called on the international community to do. We simply have to be seen to be doing, we have to do now in support of the Palestinian struggle.
I'm interested in how strong and how prevalent the BDS movement is with the local populace of South Africa, who continues to have such catastrophic problems in terms of poverty and the material issues of the existence, not to mention the fact that there's still the vestiges, to put it mildly, of apartheid in terms of human and civil rights and land issues that continue to linger. That's one thing. And the other kind of concern, and I'm wondering, as somebody who's so prominent and important in the BDS movement, when there was a BDS movement of sorts in terms of during the era of apartheid in South Africa, one of the things that people could mobilize around is the South Africans had a freedom charter. They had tactics and strategies, but they had an ultimate plan for assumption of state power, if you will. So I wonder how you look at the BDS struggle and the fact that there is no per se ultimate kind of conclusion to the freedom and liberation of Palestine at this juncture. Or do you see that there is relevant to free Palestine from the river to the sea, if I may? So there's those two questions, which I know are large, but you can grapple with them as you've grappled with such strategic issues on the world scene.
Well, I mean, you know, as the BDS movement, I think correctly, it doesn't take a position on what should the solution be, because it was also very annoying in our struggle. I grew up in, my parents were in exile in the UK. They were active in the Communist Party and the liberation movement here. And it was very annoying when people, especially in the West, would tell us how to run our struggle. Like, there would be people who would say, why do we have an armed struggle? All we should do is work with trade unions. It's a workers' struggle. Workers can all go on strike one day and the apartheid regime will fall. Other people, you know, also Pan-Africanists, would criticize us for not focusing more and being late to having an armed struggle and having a very limited armed struggle with very limited objectives or tactics, not objectives, but tactics. So I think it's very, you know, I don't think it is the business of the global BDS movement to be telling Palestinians how they should be conducting their struggle. Of course, the issue in Palestine was complicated by the Oslo Accords, and that caused a lot of, you know, solidarity movements to maybe start, you know, to kind of focus on whether or not you supported Oslo and a two-state solution, or whether or not you stuck to the position of the PLO previously of a one-state solution. But I think over time, at the moment, I think Palestinians are probably more in agreement about what's happening than ever before. When you look at what's going on in the West Bank especially, I think, well, first of all, everyone is united around the call on the international community for BDS. There's not a sort of a difference of opinion in that. The call was made by the broadest coming together of Palestinian civil society outside of the political factions and parties, although they are represented through kind of community and grassroots organizations. So I think it's safe to say that it's a unified call from Palestinian people. But yeah, I don't think it is our business to tell them how to conduct their struggle. I mean, in South Africa, we totally understand the armed struggle, and people do not have any kind of issues with an armed struggle in principle, because we had one and most countries on the continent did. And we know that in order to defeat settler colonial rule, especially if you look at Algeria, it's quite possible you would need to have an armed struggle. The details of whether or not we, you know, every single person supports every single thing they do, I think is irrelevant. The fact is that we support the Palestinian people's right to resist. We support their resistance, whether it's with an armed struggle, whether it's the people in the villages of Masafa Yatta who face daily harassment from illegal settlers and occupation forces, whether or not it's people in other parts of the West Bank or Jerusalem resisting their houses being just taken over, like in Sheikh Jarrah a couple of years ago. And, you know, all of that is resistance. And as they say, to exist is resist in Palestine. So you know, I think we have to support the right of Palestinian people to resist occupation and apartheid, as we did. And, we asked on the world to support us in that.
The South Africa BDS Coalition is supporting a protest about the AGOA Forum. Tell us how that's building, what form that struggle will take.
We have also been inspired by struggles around the world. We are in touch with, for instance, Jewish Voice for Peace in the States and seeing some of the protests that they've been at the forefront of, taking over stations and having a very peaceful but maybe nonviolent direct action approach, inspired us to look at the different ways of protesting here. And there's also been a very spontaneous outpouring of support from arts and cultural workers, and they have come together very organically to want to express support in various different ways using culture. And so we might have quite an interesting and for us quite an unusual protest that might include those more kind of, I don't know what you call it, you know, like not flash mobs exactly, but that sort of more inventive or that style of protest, which hasn't been a style of protest that has been very much the case in South Africa. We are hoping that the trade unions also, even if they did participate in this AGOA story, in which we heard that the final declaration of the trade union forum was presented to them by the American side in the beginning, and they were asked not to amend it. So it's that kind of a forum. We hope that they will come out and will support the protest as well, and that they are moving towards a more direct approach to the solidarity that is expected of South African trade unions, because we know that trade unions around the world gave us very direct support during our struggle. There has been a statement by our National Union of Mine Workers to say that they want to stop loading our major exports of coal, in fact, coal briquettes and diamonds, to stop loading ships with products that are going to be being exported to Israel. We are, of course, calling for a complete trade embargo with Israel. So we hope that our unions are going to take a much more direct approach. Some of the unions have already, in particular, GIWUSA, the General Industrial Workers Union, because the company they represent workers in, this a South African dairy company, was taken over by an Israeli Milko bottling company headquartered in the West Bank. And of course, they promised not to shed jobs and so on. As soon as the time period agreed on was up, jobs were being threatened, working conditions were being destroyed. And there was a very long drawn out strike by that union, in which the solidarity with Palestine came out very strongly. And in fact, Palestinian trade unions were sending messages of solidarity and support to the workers here in that struggle, because in fact, they were both struggling against the same company. There's a lot of potential here. And I think there is a mood in the trade union movement for really showing support above and beyond what some of the government statements might say.
Well, I know that we are a long way away from this, but there has been a general call amongst progressive trade unionists here in consultation with a huge union, the largest union, I believe, in South Africa, NUMSA, the Union of Metal Workers Unions, for an international strike to be worked on. At this time, your final thoughts on continuing to mobilize and draw people into the process of an immediate ceasefire and support for our Palestinian siblings who are subject to nothing short of a Holocaust. And many of us feel certainly that Gaza represents the final solution of Zionism to the resistance since certainly 1948 by the Palestinians of the erasure from their land and efforts to really eradicate the nation of Palestine. Your final thoughts?
Absolutely. I mean, it's urgent and it's critical that people here in South Africa especially join people around the world. And it is people's power that can shift our governments. That was the case in our struggle. So it's absolutely critical. An immediate ceasefire is a bare minimum demand, in my view. And it has to happen. We can't carry on watching a genocide unfold in real time on our TVs. It's untenable. But I think also in terms of South Africa, the BDS movement does stress the intersectionality of struggles. We saw that with the Black Lives Matter protests where Palestinians were supporting, and the protests in the States against racism and racist policing, also pointing out how interconnected our struggles are. So when Israeli companies come here pretending they can solve our water crisis, for instance, which they do all the time, because we do have a water crisis, but they can't solve it, pointing out they have stolen that water, but they say they made the desert bloom. Their water technology industry is built on dispossession of Palestinian water in order to dispossess and drive people off their land. And so how could that kind of technology ever be useful to us? We're all in the same struggle together. And I think in that way, although we face so many challenges here and the extreme unemployment rate and inequality, we are still the most unequal country in the world. It's trying to connect our struggles together so that, in fact, it's pushing our struggles forward through that solidarity and trying to return to a sense of internationalism that maybe has got lost, certainly on the part of governments and business. The internationalism has grown in this kind of racially capitalist, neoliberal global economy. But at the moment, those issues that are driving people to just say, no, we can't take this. This is enough. We have demands. We're going to make those demands on our government, on the international community, is really bringing people to take action in a way that they maybe haven't before.
Thank you for the work you do. I hope we can continue to stay in touch.
The coalition address is sabdscoalition@gmail.com.
Thank you.
What would be one of the prevalent chants that we would hear at the BDS rally?
Tamandla, Wetu, and
Luta Kantua.
Vittore Eserte.
I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
And we continue to build bridges and for a free Palestine. Ceasefire now.